This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world.
Paul and Michael occasionally save the world. Occasionally.
Welcome, everybody, to the return of Michael Sparkman on Paul and Michael Occasionally Save the World. So we have Sparky back this week. And to warm us up, it's getting late. We're both tired. I don't know about you, but it's cold here, too. And I'm watching Game 3 of the World Series, so I'm highly distractible. We're going to warm up today with some Twitter questions. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
All right. So we don't have a lot of Twitter questions. Nick definitely set us up with quite a few good ones last time, but he must have been busy, got none from Nick, which is why they were subpar.
Well, that or he was just completely disappointed in half of the answers that he received, meaning the ones from me. It could be that.
So, yeah, he was probably disappointed in the well-thought-out answers that you replied with, but was completely satisfied with the BS that came out of my mouth.
I don't know. Well, let's get going. What do we have? What do inquiring minds want to know?
All right, so Martin of Comic Talk Today, of Valiant Central Podcast fame, of the Nerdy Legion Podcast, he comes with the question, what's the secret to winning the lottery? So what is your answer? How do you win the lottery, Sparky?
There are two answers to this question, and I think both are valid. The one I've heard most often is to win the lottery is not to play, therefore you don't lose the money you would have lost. Because the odds of winning are just, like recently the Mega Millions was up to almost like $1.6 billion or something like that. And the odds were like 1 in 300 million to win. So yeah, if you don't play, you win by not losing that money. But my theory is, you got to play when it gets to that crazy, because guess what? Somebody won that money. And, if it's just throwing out like $2 to $4, just a couple of lines of numbers, I'm willing to do that if it gets me, that kind of money that can ruin my life.
My answer is just buy all the tickets.
All of them.
All of them. Get on it, Martin.
So you need to like to buy all the tickets from everyone.
All the tickets.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen this time and time again in shows. There was a Scrooge McDuck comic where he bought all of this quarter, like this one mint of quarter, worthless. I mean, you know, worth a quarter, obviously, but, you know, worthless, like no further value to it. He bought all of them for beyond their value. And then he took the whole cash of those quarters and disposed of all of them but one, which made that one quarter ridiculously valuable. But he also learned the problem is that when something's that valuable, you can't sell it to anybody. So it's also so valuable that there's no value to it. So there you go. If you win the lottery, there's actually no value to all the money you just won. I think that's the answer that we just got to right there.
I think you solved it.
Winning the lottery is just pointless. So, next question. This is a better question. Ed Moore asks, after scores of episodes of dozens of shows, I believe there has been an unfortunate lack of disc golf talk. What of that? I know what my answer is to this already. So why don't you lead off again, Sparky?
I don't know why we don't talk about it. Is this same thing as like what we call frisbee golf, disc golf?
Yeah, pretty much. Like disc golf, like they're not actually just frisbees, they're essentially frisbees.
They're specific discs,
yeah. I've never played it myself. I have seen these discs. I have seen the weird things you throw them into. I have never done it, though.
I have played one time in my life, and it was kind of fun until I'll make it a quick story. Had a cousin. He had a girlfriend that lived down in Austin years ago. And I went down with him to hang out. And I and his girlfriend and her roommate went to play in Austin frisbee golf, disc golf, along in one of the parks down there along the river. And I'd never played before. And, you know, I think I was like the last person to go. And they were all hanging out near the goal or target or whatever you would call it, this little thing you're trying to get the disc to go to. And I said, you ought to move because I don't want to hit you. And they didn't move. So I flung the disc, flung the frisbee, and I smacked the girlfriend's roommate right in the nose. And this is from like 70 feet. And it wasn't intentional, but, you know, I said move. So that's my only experience. And I think the game ended right then because I don't think it broke it, but it came darn close to it. So, yeah. Yeah, so for once, and, you know, I've never heard anybody talk about disc golf. So I think we're breaking ground here.
So first of all, I got to say that person had it coming.
Probably. I said move. Yeah.
Yeah. You shouldn't do that. It's just dumb. Don't stand by where projectile's coming at. That's just dumb. So my answer to the question is quite simple. You don't talk about disc golf. You live it.
You live it.
You go out there and you do it. You do it to its fullest.
Yeah. Disc golf for life. Tattooed on your stomach.
Yes. Episode title right there.
Disc golf for life. Yeah.
Quick tangent before the next question. As I mentioned, I am watching Game 3 of the World Series. My Dodgers are in the World Series for the second year in a row. And Walker Buehler, this 24-year-old kid, is pitching. He's two outs deep in the seventh inning. He's throwing 103 pitches. He's pitching a shutout, throwing 100-mile-per-hour balls. 24-year-old rookie. It's just amazing. This is the best pitching performance of the series so far, and he's about to go through seven innings. He's striking fools out still.
It's no pressure. No pressure at all.
If you could see him, he doesn't look like he has a bit of pressure on him.
Yeah.
And he is just throwing some heat here, so I think we got something on our hands here. So next question coming from Alex Cossa, regular fill-in for the off weeks. What was the last comic/movie/thing that people crapped on, to change his word a little bit, that when you finally read or watched it, you realized that people were wrong? So what's the last thing you can think of that people were all very negative about? And maybe you were reluctant to check it out, or I don't know, maybe you just checked out right away. But when you checked it out, you loved it.
Two things jumped to mind for me. One was, of course, we've talked about this, The Last Jedi. So many people hated on it. And it turns out so many Russian bots, we can just blame it on the Russian bots swaying people to hate on it. But the one thing that really pops to mind is, and it might get us kicked off the network for me saying this, but the one thing that gets crapped on a lot was Jodie Hauser's Faith books. I absolutely love the entire run she did of everything, and I'm almost caught up on all my Valiant reading, and I read Faith, the issue dealing with Faith and the Dream Side, and I just love it. I love the character. I love the way that she brings in all this kind of pop culture nerdiness that Faith has, and this the way she has the character development. And, you know, for me, I don't have a problem with it. Maybe it doesn't fit the whole grand scheme of what people want Valiant to be, but just as a book, I've always enjoyed it.
Yeah. I'm not even going to go to Valiant for mine because towards the end of my fervor for Valiant, a lot of people were being a lot of negative on a lot of things I still thought were good. Mm-hmm. But there was kind of extenuating circumstances. I mean, I'm even to the point now where I'm not reading a lick of Valiant at the moment.
Right. Right.
I'll probably at some point in the future when there's a sale, go back and start picking up, digitally some of the stuff that I dropped off on.
Yeah.
I think there still will be good stuff. There's still stuff right now that's probably good, but I think Valiant, strikeout. He just struck out, got through the seventh inning. Unbelievable. This is unbelievable. But anyways, so I'm not even going to go there because there's definitely plenty I could say there, but, I think for me, it's probably mostly been the superhero movies, and I kind of want to say I haven't tried much with watching the TV shows other than the stuff on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
The Marvel stuff on Netflix. But even that, there's some stuff that people love that I just like. I kind of fell out of the mood for it for a long time. We actually talked about that some on our last podcast together. I'm getting ready to dive back in on that, but I'd say the Marvel movies is a big thing. Because there's always somebody that's just crapping on whatever just came out. But I watch all of them. I'm not running to the movie theater to see them necessarily. Like, Ant-Man and Wasp is out at Redbox now. When I have a day where I have reasonable, like next week, I'm actually going to be on vacation after Monday. So I'll probably pick that movie up at some point and watch it.
Yeah, same for me with the DC movies. I've loved them. And a lot of people, you know, listening to Ronnie and Aaron on Absolute DC podcast, Aaron has a theory about why there's like kind of like a mentality out there that just wants to crush that kind of stuff. I've enjoyed them. I've liked everything they put out. But then again, it kind of goes back to our perspective that we've talked about before about how you go into it trying to, if you're not going to watch it if you don't think you're going to like it. And I watched a movie recently that I thought was going to be good, and it wasn't good, but you know, there were still some good points to it, but it's not something I'm going to bring up or bash. Some people might like it. It's one of those things that, I don't know. Everybody's going to, there's no good answer to that either. Cause you know, they're not wrong for not liking it if they don't like it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think it just kind of goes to what Joey and I talked about on the last episode, what you and I have talked about before. If you don't like something, like say that you don't like it, say why you don't like it. But when you go too far is when you want to attack anybody who says that they like it, or when somebody likes it, you want to ruin it for them. The closest I could say that I've ever come to that, and this was just somebody really sharing their opinion, but it did sway my opinion a little bit, is I really loved Fractions Hawkeye with David Aja doing most of the artwork. Artwork. And somebody didn't really care for it, so I pressed them, and they told me why. So I mean, it's just them sharing their opinions. They weren't trying to ruin it for me. But then when I was trying to reread it, it kind of ruined it for me a little bit.
Oh, really?
But
yeah.
A little more time passed, and I kind of looked at it a little differently and realized, you know what? It doesn't matter if there's flaws. If I enjoyed it, that matters more than flaws, you know? So I still haven't gone back and reread it yet, but that's something that I'll be getting my hands on again soon. And it was just the experience reading it when I read it, too, was just – it was great, you know? Absolutely loved that run of Hawkeye.
And that was a good that was one of those books you have been kind enough to let me read, and I'm going to be sending it back to you. That's why you're going to get to read it again. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. I think it drags. There are a couple of points that I was like scratching my head a little bit, but I think it was near the end of the run. But it's nothing that I would like back on the whole series. I really, really enjoyed it. Everything, just the creative way they had the layouts, the art, everything, the writing was all superb. So, yeah, that was a good book.
Yeah. So that's Alex's question. I could probably think of other things, but I think it's also the kind of thing where I don't even think of those things as much as I used to, because I really don't care what people think about
things. Yeah.
I care more about their positive views than on their even if I know somebody has different tastes than me, if there's something that isn't usually in my wheelhouse that they like, I'll ask them what they think about it so that way I can consider their opinion, even though I know that there's still maybe a 50-50 chance that I won't like it or won't care about it. But I think looking for the positive goes a lot further than looking for the negative in people's opinions on stuff.
Oh, heck yeah. What's next?
Next up. Ronnie asks, I actually thought this was a pretty darn interesting question. If you were going to get a short story published in an anthology, which would scare you most? A, having everyone read your work, or B, worrying if people would like it?
That's a good question.
It is a good question.
And long time ago, I submitted two stories to Southern Literary Journal. It's a pretty nice thing. And submitting the first thing you ever submit is kind of scary for that same very reason. One of them almost made it, and they had some very good reasons why they didn't accept it. And another thing is I actually know somebody that's submitting something to an anthology, a story. But to me, they're kind of the same thing. I would be scared for both of them. But at the same time, you got to do it. You just got to put it out there. I mean, it's kind of like I read recently, if you want to create something, you create it. And if no one ever accepts it, that's fine, because you still have the drive to do it. Now, I mean, everybody's not going to be Matt Kent or Jeff Lemire, just to throw out a couple of names that, you know, right now, everything they kind of throw out is kind of taken as gold. But they had to start somewhere, and they probably were hesitant at first to put it out. And so if you've got something that you believe in, You don't worry about either of those things. You just do it. You put it out to the world and let the world accept it or not. You know, don't worry about the any negative feedback. And, you know, you just do it. And then, you know, if there are criticisms, you take it and you build on it and do better the next time. Because like Samuel Beckett said, fail once, fail again, fail better. You're always in this process. The creative process is never complete. You're never perfect. You're always trying new things. You're trying to reach this ideal that's in your mind. And I guarantee you, a lot of the people that we admire, they can look at things that we've read that we love, and they can say, yeah, that kind of sucked, because looking back at it, I don't like it that much, because I should have done this or should have done that. So one, don't second guess yourself. Go with your heart, you know, create, and, just put it out there. And I mean, if you're lucky enough to get it accepted in the first place, just be happy with the fact that it got accepted.
Yeah, so I thought about this for a little bit. And I can relate this to starting to make podcasts, because, I mean, like, Martin and I, neither one would ever want to go back and listen to our first episodes of Doing Valiant After Podcast. That's for sure. I still, like, I don't want to go back and listen to anything I've done. You know, luckily, you usually do the editing, and even if I record with somebody else, at least for you, you're getting to listen to the podcast, you know, without having to wait for it to, you know, be posted, I guess. But I don't want to hear what I do after I do it. I think my mentality with that has just become like, I'm going to put it out there. And because in the past we've gotten, like, just knowing that anybody enjoys it to whatever extent gives me the courage to put it out there. So I think for me, it's just getting over that hurdle of not caring if people are going to read or listen to or whatever. You know, in this case, listening to the podcast, like, I it doesn't bother me that people are going to listen to this. At first, that was kind of the part that made me nervous about doing it, was people might actually listen to this, you know? Mm-hmm. Once I get over that, it doesn't matter if people like it or not. There are going to be people who do. There are going to be people who don't. Most everybody's going to be too lazy to give feedback anyways. So what does it matter, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, if you enjoy it, do it. Yeah. And same thing. I was the same way when I started with Dave. I had always sworn I'd never do a podcast. But the stars aligned perfectly. It's like, well, why not? What do I care? And we honestly didn't care if anybody listened. Mm-hmm. We just enjoy doing it and still do. That's still what drives us. And that's what drives me to do this with you. You know, there might be 3 people listening. There might be 300 listening. It doesn't matter. It's just the fact that, you know, good conversations. And, you know, sometimes you do get feedback and it's nice. So you always follow. It's just kind of like that old, to be cliche, that old Nike thing. Just do it, from like the 90s. If it's something you love doing, just do it. If it's podcasting, if it's writing. My wife loves to paint and create and do stuff. She just does it, you know, and you put it out and see what happens.
Exactly. Aaron's question, if the hammer is with the questions, who is the screwdriver with?
The screw. Come on, Aaron.
Easy. Your question, why am I so tired?
Yeah. Why am I so tired? I know why I'm tired.
Yeah, I'm tired too. It has been a rough couple of weeks. Busy, lots of early days. I'll have to get up early tomorrow, but I have to work tomorrow night. Got to go to a birthday party before I go to work. And I've had a lot of late nights watching this World Series.
My reason is my wife and I are masochists. And I guess we're sadomasochists because she tortures me and I torture her. We got hooked on this Netflix show, Making of a Murderer, last weekend. And it flowed into watching it till 2 in the morning on several consecutive nights, and that kind of starts the week out. Still got to get up. I mean, you stay up till 2 in the morning, you still got to get up at 6:37 or whatever, and it just kind of feeds on it. And she's been getting ready for this craft show she's doing, and that means I'm getting ready for a craft show she's doing. And we've been, the past 2 days, I've melted 200 to almost 300 cans of aluminum in my little home foundry that we made, and I don't know, something about that heat just kills you. I mean, seriously, just melting all that stuff just is just murder. But so that's why I'm tired.
Yeah, it's tiring being around. I mean, just like being in the sun too much is tiring. That stuff just tires you out. So those are all of our Twitter questions. Now we know why we're tired.
I'm usually tired, though, so that's not really a good question.
But I'm going to tell you what, Sparky. I am a little semi-distracted tonight while we record this, so it's going to be on you a little bit more to lead this podcast along. So I'm going to let you get us started, and we'll kind of get flowing, I'm sure. But when it drags, you have to nudge us along.
Okay. I've got like really just a couple of things, a couple of topics. I might think of a third one. The first one I'm going to bring up is going to be a quiz for you. You've mentioned several times about your love for playing video games.
Uh-huh.
And in the past, I played a lot of video games. A lot of them were PC games I would play. Recently, most of my game playing is all centered on my phone. So if it's something I can play on my phone when I'm hanging out with my wife, we're talking, she's doing something, I'm doing something, we're still interacting. For a long time, I played a game, Risk, which I played as a board game when I was young. There's a great app you can download and play against other people around the world. I played it. Played a number of other games. Right now, my addiction is this game called Archery King. And it's just what it says. There's lots of different scenarios where you can shoot a bow, and you basically just, you win money, get better equipment, and so on. And, that's what my biggest gameplay has been. But there's something my family does as a family. We participate together. It's this game called HQ. It's a trivia game. Think Jeopardy, but on your phone. And you can win money. I've won 4 times over the course of several months, and I have a total of $2.02 in winnings that I'm sitting in the HQ bank. And it's fun. They have a good host. They're funny. A guy named Scott Rogowski and Matt Richards. Matt Richards is my favorite. But you really can. Like on Sunday night, they're having a Disney-themed a game where you're guaranteed to win. If you win, you're guaranteed to win at least $250 or more, depending on how many people also hit that cutoff line that they have established. So last Thursday, they had an office-themed quiz, and I was fortunate enough to get everyone right. And it was like 36,000 people also were big Office fans, so it amounted to be like 16 cents, right? I wanted to give you that quiz because I know that you like The Office and have watched it quite a bit yourself. So if you're game for it, I'm about to give you a quiz.
I'm game for it. And see, and you got to test me even more because I have a handicap because I'm distracted by Chris Taylor being up to bat right now.
Okay, here's the thing. I was going to give you the option of just answering the question, but the way the game is played, it's a multiple choice. You get 3 questions, okay? So question number 1. The Office is mainly set at what company? Mitch and Murray, Dunder Mifflin, the Parks Department.
Yeah, I could have said Dunder Mifflin before you gave me options.
I know. That's kind of their conceit is that the first two or three, they give you normally 12 questions, and sometimes it goes up to 15 for the big money things, or for like the really big like money things, like $100,000. It goes on and on till it ends. But usually, like the first 2 or 3 questions is really easy. Question 2: which character does not appear in the very first episode of The Office? Kevin Malone, Andy Bernard, or Jan Levinson Gould?
That's Andy, and that one you have to have the options because there's obviously other characters that could fit that bill.
True. Question 3: what does Jim famously do to Dwight Stapler? And that's almost in every intro. Glue googly eyes on it, melt it in the microwave, or put it in Jello.
Puts it in Jello. Wasn't that the first episode? I watched the first episode or two. I think it might have just been the first one, but yeah, he does that right off the bat. That's so good.
What is the name of Michael Scott's screenplay? Threat Level Midnight, What's Up Dog, Scott's Tots.
Threat Level Midnight.
Now, these are easy. And in fact, this was so easy, I think they thought it was going to be hard. They actually did another one last night, and we would have come close to winning. And part of the fun of us playing all three together is one of us gets knocked out, we're there to help each other. So it's kind of like, it's interactive. Like, if I know an answer, I throw it out there. Definitely this. And my teenage daughter always, of course, says, "Are you sure?" And I'm like, "Yes, of course, I'm sure. I said it's definitely this." And next question. Jim famously says, "It was not a bad day after what happens. He starts at Stanford. He first pranks Michael, or Pam falls asleep on him."
Pam falls asleep on him.
You're doing good. You would have had a chance at $5,000, it looks like. Let's see. Which of these items is not inside Pam's teapot gift for her secret from her secret Santa? A cassette tape, hot sauce, or watercolors?
Watercolors.
You're just acing this. During the only Christmas party Dwight got to plan, which character passes out? Do you want to just answer, or do you want me to give you a hint?
Yeah, give me the.
Dwight got to plan one Christmas party. One character passed out. Angela, Dwight, or Daryl? This was a savage question. 136,000 people. Oh, no. 136,000 people got it right. 150,000 people got it wrong, it looks like.
Yeah, I think it's Daryl.
Yeah, it's Daryl. Yeah, Daryl was upset.
Yep, yeah. He was upset, so he was drinking, and then he drank too much, and yeah.
And smashed the table. What does Michael Scott say right before running over Meredith? I feel very blessed. I just like driving, or I love everyone.
I love everyone.
Yep. Which of these three characters did not dress up as a cat for Halloween? Creed, Andy, or Pam?
Creed.
Got it. He's kind of, he was covered in blood. And it said, "Oh, it's Halloween? How convenient." Who operates the camera during the Office lip dub music video? I'll say that again. Who operates the camera during the Office lip dub music video? Toby Flenderson, Gabe Lewis, or Holly Flax?
Gabe.
And first one wrong. It's Toby.
Toby?
Toby was the one doing the camera. That's a tough one.
That is
and
a tough
you got,
one.
You got two more. We're going to go on. Which of these is not an ingredient mentioned in Kevin's famous chili? Ancho chilies, onion, or smoked beef? Which of these is not an ingredient? Ancho chilies, onion, or smoked beef?
Smoked beef.
Got it. Where do Jim and Pam share their very first kiss? The booze cruise, the warehouse, or a chain restaurant?
Same again?
The booze cruise, the booze warehouse. Cruise. No. Chain restaurant.
Ah.
See, what that's tough. It was that Chili's when
oh,
they were doing
yeah,
the Dundies.
I remember now.
See, it's tough. Yeah, I mean, you know something. And, you know, we did the Office one on Thursday, and I got kicked out because of, they said at Michael's wedding, I guess, when Oscar gets up and does his toast, it's all in Spanish. What does he say about Michael? And the options were, he gives me ulcers, he's not human, and something else. And I couldn't remember because it was so fast when he said it. I didn't like try to understand what he was saying. So I chose he's not human just as a guess. And that's what threw me out. But no, he says he gives me ulcers all the time. But no, you did good. And you know, if you played regularly, you get extra lives and you would have got to the very last question. So it's fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
It's a fun thing.
It's been a while since I've watched it. I literally watched the first episode and then kind of switched on to something else. But yeah, my wife and I have rewatched the Office several times, including when we had the DVDs, we watched all the commentary several times also.
Yeah, it's a good show. It's always on. And you know, I got my news feed set up. I haven't set it up for this. I don't know why it keeps popping up, but I keep getting things Office related all the time in the news. People are constantly talking about it. So it's one of those, I think it's got like a second life. People are still watching it. New people are finding it and still loving it. So it's a good show.
Yeah, definitely.
What's the score now?
Still 1-0. Kenley Jansen's pitching in the top of the eighth. Zero outs. He's going against his first batter right now. This is a stressful game. I mean, so far the Dodgers have been perfect. And Boston has been just ever so slightly less perfect.
Hmm.
I would have rather had a blowout, but anyways, back to the podcast topics at hand. I guess let's see what I will talk about. I'm going to save my bigger category for a little bit later, but I'll talk about video games a little bit. So since my son's in kindergarten now, I have some time when I have a day off during the day, or during the week, I mean. I have time to actually be able to like get into and play a video game. And so I've been digging through some stuff. Like, you know, I've talked a lot about playing Bioshock Infinite and just the Bioshock collection as a whole. Well, I finished those up. I traded that in because I enjoyed it a lot. So I was debating, like, should I keep it because I enjoyed it that much, or should I trade it in? Because realistically, when am I going to play it again, you know? So I traded it in because I figure if down the road, if I ever regret trading it in, I could buy it again. Like, it's not that expensive now, and by then it'll be even cheaper, so.
Yeah.
I moved on to my next game for a little bit, but then somebody let me borrow the new Spider-Man game. So I've been playing that predominantly. I'm about halfway complete on it, because not only is there the main mission, but there are a ton of side missions. So I've been taking my time doing all the side missions. And I love this game. It's very enjoyable. Once I get it all done, it'll definitely be the type of thing that at that point I, you know, won't see wanting to play it more.
Yeah.
But what makes it great is it's just fun to play. Like, it's just fun to move around.
You know, that's the game Alex brought up that when you talked to him, right?
Where yeah.
He just loves swinging through the city.
Exactly. He mentioned that he leveled up just like wall running. And that's one thing that's cool is there's just so many elements in it that give you experience, or that like a lot of the side missions, they're very little things. Like I've finished two side missions that were there right off the bat. One is you have to go around and find different like monuments, different landmarks, and take pictures of them. So that's really easy to do. Another one is you have to go around and find backpacks that he's left webbed all over the city. Because, you know, it's like when he accidentally becomes Spider-Man, he webs his backpack to a wall or something and leaves it there. So those are two things that were just kind of easy and fun to do. But to do them, basically, they're easy to find on the map. Like, nothing is really hard to figure out or to find. You just have to get to it, basically. And then once you get there, you find it. So just moving about doing those things is fun. But then, like, as you're swinging around, you kind of accumulate experience for, like, everything. Wall running, for free falling, for, like, speed, like, you know, moving quickly. All these different things. Like, you'll just be swinging along, and all of a sudden you'll get a boost of experience because you've free-falled for however many number of feet in the game. So there's just so many different things like that that are fun, like little things to accomplish. That game's just been a ball. So far, you start the game off right off the bat with getting to and fighting Wilson Fisk. So that's like, it's the first thing you're progressing through. Mm-hmm. Since that, I've fought the Shocker twice, and those are the only, you know, supervillains I fought against. So there's still, like, I'm, you know, barely getting started there, pretty much. I have no idea all the villains that are in this game or not, but, you know, obviously there's got to be a lot of stuff left to tap into at this point.
Is it following, like, a narrative, or, like, you're going along a storyline where you have to accomplish task after task, or is it, like, kind of like you happen upon different challenges?
There's a storyline, and there's, like, you know, where you go to trigger the next part of the storyline, basically.
Okay.
And then there's side missions. So far the side, like all the side tasks or side missions really haven't been a story in themselves, at least not to like a significant extent. Like one of them is you start finding like where the Black Cat is staking out where she's going to go and commit a robbery. So you have to go around, like she challenges you to go around and find all of these spots. And she says, if you catch me before I steal this much, then I'll turn it around and go clean, you know. It all ends up being a ploy. And when you complete it, she did all that to trick you to help her get something that she wanted to get. But she also leaves you with a new spider suit. So that's like one of the things you unlock as you go through the game is a lot of different spider suits with different designs. And then the different designs have different powers. But then as you unlock the suits, you don't have to use that suit's design to use that suit's power. Once you unlock it, you can use that power with any of the suits. So it's nice because you're not stuck using a suit you don't like the look of just to be able to tap into the power that it gives you.
Okay.
But, yeah, so, I mean, like, that's a little bit of a story, but that's pretty loose. Like, that's, you know, okay, let's... We're making people find these 12 different spots. That's all we're doing. But we'll, like, kind of make a really basic story around it, too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just been super enjoyable. So that's the game I've been playing, and I've been enjoying it a lot. Once I finish that up, I'll give it back to the person I borrowed it from, and I'll go back to playing Shadow of War. And then I have a few other games I want to play, and hopefully by the time I get through a small array of games that I have, the game I'm really excited about is Red Dead Redemption 2.
I've been reading a lot about that game. Red Dead. So you played the first one?
Yeah, I played Red Dead Redemption, and also before that was Red Dead Revolver, which Red Dead Redemption was another company basically bought the rights to it. Or like they you know, they took over the publishing rights. The Red Sox just tied it up, sons of bitches.
Oh,
1-1 game.
That sounds like a. Well, that's a two good games going on. We're talking about one you're watching and one we're talking about. I've been seeing it pop up, and it seems like an interesting game.
Yeah, it's a big deal because people have been eager for a sequel to the last one. Like, I remember when Red Dead Redemption was announced, and it was, you know, a different studio making it and everything. And I had played Red Dead Revolver when it was a new game and thought it was great. And, you know, so then Red Dead Redemption's coming out, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, I liked what it was. Like, why do I want all this different stuff? But it was, you know, way, way better. Just fantastic. I mean, it was... you know, just taking the game kind of into new territory that now is, you know, pretty commonplace in games. But
yeah.
So everybody's been yearning for this sequel. And, I mean, there have been a lot of delays on this, too. So it's been a while coming. So everybody's very excited about it. But I've definitely learned to be patient with games. And I wait until I'm ready to play them. And usually by the time I'm ready to play them, it'll be a lot cheaper to get them than if I get them when they're brand new.
Kind of like that with everything.
Yeah.
Just about. The other game you mentioned, that's the second Lord of the Rings game, right?
Mm-hmm. Shadow of War.
Yeah. And see, you mentioned that, and it brought up the actual answer to why I'm so tired, in addition to everything else. But before we get into one other thing here, did you get a cat at 1 week after... I heard you say you have cat allergies. I saw something on Twitter that you got a cat.
Yep, I got a cat.
We got a cat, too. And it's a process that started right the weekend before my birthday. And one of the deals was I would get to name the cat. And I jokingly said we'd name the cat Smeagol after, you know, Gollum Smeagol. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think that they would go for it. But for some reason, my oldest daughter fell in love with it. I gave him many outs. That cat was great when we first got it. And I'm not a big cat person, never have been, but this one's kind of fun. Got kind of an attitude, a little bit edgy, likes to fight, likes to run around doing crazy stunts, kind of like Spider-Man or Yoda or something, which my wife would rather name the cat Yoda because she has ears like Yoda. But in the last week, this kitten has learned how to get onto our bed. And she wakes my wife up like 3 times a night. And if my wife doesn't sleep, that means I don't sleep. So, yeah, that's really why I'm tired, because of this little Smeagol. Yeah, that reminded me. I was so tired I couldn't remember. I hadn't intended to bring that up. But so you have a cat, and the allergies aren't killing you, I'm hoping.
No, actually, it's going pretty well on that front. I've been pretty happy about that. We had some bumpy nights. The cat was adopted from a rescue place, so she's a 6-year-old cat. But yeah, I mean she's been good. The real headache the first couple of nights is that the rabbit was being a jerk. So one night we go to bed. We went to bed pretty early, and we both passed out. We were tired, and then I get woken up about 11:30 with the rabbit stomping, and so I go down there wanting to murder the rabbit, but I'm trying to calm it down. And then after a little bit, my wife finally gets woken up by it. So she comes down furious and is like yelling at it, shaking the cage. I'm like, I've been trying to calm it down for like half an hour. And she comes down and does all that. So we covered the cage. That seemed to work pretty well. But then I end up getting woken up a few hours later by the rabbit stomping in. So I just went downstairs and I turned the TV on quietly and laid on the couch and went back to sleep.
How big of a rabbit is this if its stomping is waking you up? Or just the cage just makes a lot of noise?
Rabbits are super loud.
Okay.
They stomp really loud. They have, you know, strong stomping abilities. So it's very percussive. But, yeah, so we had a couple nights like that, but it hasn't been too bad.
Okay, so that, you're mentioning the game somehow made a brain neuron fire off and remind me of why I'm tired. Let's get into something. A few weeks ago, there was a big Image comic sale, right? And you messaged me. I was riding on a tractor, and you said, hey, did you check out the Image sale? I'm like, yeah, I was just about to ask you. Is there anything I should check out? And you and I had picked up the two trades of 7 to Eternity, which I've read already, but I just wanted to read them in trade on my Kindle. I think I'd got another book or two for really, really good deals. When you said you need to check out something called Rumble, and I was like, well, what's this? And you said, well, you like that book you recommended me, Birthright. I'm like, well, yeah. And I was like, but normally, you know, it's kind of fantasy. Birthright's fantasy. You don't really love fantasy. But what is it that drove you to starting? Well, how did you find this book, first of all, that you ended up recommending to me? Because I ended up getting all of the trades for great deals. And I absolutely love it.
So I actually got I discovered Rumble from randomly picking up a little bit of it on an Image sale. At some point a while back when I went through a period where I would dabble a little bit more and pick up, like, you know, a couple issues here or there when they were having a sale. And I don't really do that quite as much anymore because I would typically rather get stuff in trade. And I don't know, I guess for a while with Image, I was kind of like, oh man, I got to dip my toes around and see what I like. Now that I have kind of dipped my toes a little bit in different Image stuff, I know that there's some stuff, like some categories that I like. And other stuff that I'm probably not going to care for. So I definitely, like, for a little bit, I kind of had that feeling like, you know, whatever Image put out had a good chance of being entertaining. And now I don't, like, a lot of it's kind of fizzles pretty quickly if it's not kind of just right for you, you know? So, you know, for some people it'll be great for, and then other people will just be like, yeah, this isn't any good. So I randomly had some Rumble and I read it, because there was another Image sale. So I was like, okay, well, I have a few issues of this. I should check it out. So I checked it out and I liked it. So I picked up more and the art really drew me in. There's just something about the character design that I really liked. And now, especially now that I've been reading through BPRD Hell on Earth, and I'm on volume 11 of that. And there is a character in that, actually, that I didn't come across this character till far, far after reading Rumble. But there's something about the character that reminds me a lot of the, I guess not the main protagonist in Rumble is like the normal guy, right?
Yeah.
But the other guy, the main fantasy protagonist, you know?
I want to read the, I guess it's the solicit. A scarecrow warrior god walks into a bar and proceeds to drag a modern American city into a 10,000-year-old grudge match. A bizarre new adventure complete with booze hound shamans, monster queens, and a football-fetching hydra. And the name of the protagonist, the main protagonist aside from the human, is Wrathrak. And
yeah.
He is the scarecrow. Yeah.
Yeah. So Wrathrak the scarecrow, there's things about him that reminds me of this character in BPRD Hell on Earth, which is written by John Arcudi also. You know, Mike Mignola is on there with writing credits, but I mean, John Arcudi's name has been on that book for a lot. So, like, I would imagine that Mignola is probably involved kind of for, you know, scripting and storytelling purposes, but he's probably...
Guidance. Yeah,
yeah, I doubt he's doing the, you know, the page by page work of it. But yeah, this one character reminded me in ways of that character from Rumble, which has kind of got me excited about it again. So you're actually probably ahead of me on Rumble because I had picked up everything I could at a certain point. It was everything that was out. I believe they had done kind of like one big story arc, probably like three trades worth of stuff, and then they like let it sit for a while. And they start coming out with the next volume. I haven't gotten any of that yet. And the artist, which is...
The first artist was James Herron for the first three trades.
Yep, and he was very good. And then they switched to... Oh, gosh, who is it?
David Rubin.
Yeah, David Rubin, who does Ether by Matt Kent, which I also really like. So I was really excited for that, but I haven't gotten any of that yet.
Okay, so you got something to look forward to. And it's really interesting. I'm not going to spoil it for you. The first 15 issues ran from 2014 to 2016, and then it kind of laid quiet, and then they started it up late. The trade just came out in June, so it ran for another 5 issues. So you can do the math on that. I guess it started earlier in 2018. And that's when Dave Rubin started doing it. And Dave Stewart does the colors, and a lot of people are going to know the name Dave Stewart because his colors are on all kinds of things that I've been reading lately. Mm-hmm. And like the Brian Wood stuff I've been reading. I finished reading the second volume of Starve, which I loved. But yeah, this book is good, and it's going when you get to the fourth trade. It's called A Soul Without Pity. They're doing some interesting things with the characters. Just like everybody isn't going through some changes about who they are, facing different challenges, and even the main guy, Wrathrock, I don't know how you'd say it. He's kind of having to learn how to deal with being back in the world, and questioning is he even needed, because there's some weird, interesting things going on. I really love the book. I'm glad it's still going on. And the funny thing is you said Rumble. I'm like, Rumble? Grumble? Grumble is Rafer's book. I'm like, no. No, it's Rumble. I looked up. Yeah, there's a Rumble book. I don't want anybody to forget that Grumble comes out November 21st of next month. I think that's the right date. So keep that on your radar. Looking forward to see how that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good book. And David Rubin's art is different enough to where you can notice it's different, but it really, the style, they're similar enough to where it carries on and it doesn't really throw you. So it's an interesting book. The other summary they give is John Arcudi and James Herron bring you a modern day action adventure fantasy thriller where rundown dive bars, undead kitty cats, psycho skinheads, and giant mummies all play a part. It's Louis C.K. meets Robert E. Howard in a David Fincher universe.
Nice. Yeah, really love that book. All right, I'm back. I was hoping to come down and see the Dodgers be up like 3-1, but it's still just 1-1.
1-1 still. What inning?
Bottom of the eighth, 2 outs.
Bottom of the eighth, 2 outs. What pitcher's in for the Dodgers, or is it
It's the Red Sox up, and it's Barnes. Machado's at the bat, the most hated player in baseball this postseason. Let's see if he's
going to be a hero.
Huh?
Are you one of those people that has to like wear a certain thing when your team's playing? Like you have to have a Dodgers cap on or a jersey, or some people are like that. Like when the Cowboys play, they got to have their Cowboys jersey on. And no,
not really. When the 49ers were doing good, I would usually, when they were playing, I'd wear my 49ers jersey, even if their game wasn't televised. Like on game day, I'd wear my 49ers jersey. Like the Dodgers, I'm not really going to wear. I have a Dodgers hat. That's the only Dodgers thing that I have right now, because it's not like it's easy to find stuff around here. But I'll usually, when I'm watching the game, I'll have my Dodgers hat on just because. But not like some people where they make a big deal out of it, I guess.
Yeah. I don't even follow sports that closely except for the fantasy football now. And every week I make a bad decision on who I play. Somebody will do really good that's on my bench, much better than somebody that's I had in my starting lineup. So I'll switch them out, and then it always bites me. And I end up switching them back, and then it bites me again. So I'm just going to try to like get a lineup and stick with it.
It's more important to have a good system than a good outcome, because a good outcome can come just from luck. But if you have a good system, then you're more often going to hit playing the right players when you should.
Yeah. Before you get into your topic that you want to talk about next, I want to bring up the fact that you sent me a bunch of X-Men comics, and I started reading them. I read The Return of Wolverine by, is it Charles Soule? Is that how you say it?
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me, too, yeah. I love that book. And, you know, I never even followed the death of Wolverine that closely, but it's just a good, I enjoyed the heck out of it. I kind of look forward to seeing what happens next. Then I jumped into the older ones you sent me. I guess there were some extras you sent. One was a Claremont 273, and there's so many words in the book, so much going on, but it's good. I enjoyed it. But then I jumped up. The next one was 296, and that's when it had changed to, is it Lobdell?
Yeah.
Was writing. And I sent you a text saying that book creeped me out because that's the issue where I'm terrible with names. Two of the main people in the book are confronted with, they're given the task that they have to kill a baby or die. That issue just creeped the heck out of me. It's part 9 of Executioner's Song. And so I missed like 8 other issues before that. But, you know, I could follow it. I knew what was going on. And it made me want to go back because I'm pretty sure this is still in, or it's leading up to. I had the first 4 Essential X-Men books. And I think a lot of this is in those. So I'm partway through the second volume of that. I want to get back into finishing and catching up to that. So
yeah, I don't think that stuff goes down into the late 200s. I forget exactly how far it goes, but it gets pretty far through Claremont stuff. Yeah, I'm not even nearly there yet. I am not quite to issue 200 yet even. And I've been focusing on reading BPRD Hell on Earth, but I think after I finish up the next 4+ trades that I have of Hell on Earth, I'm probably going to jump back over to X-Men and try to pound through a bunch more of that.
Yeah, I think X-Men is one of those things I'm going to jump back into, especially after listening to you and Alex talk about it a couple weeks ago. So, you got anything else you want to talk about, Paul?
Yeah, so as far as what I've been reading, you know, I mentioned the BPRD Hell on Earth, which is probably the main thing I've been reading. But one thing I've been wanting to do is I've been wanting to get back to reading literature, like, you know, not just comic books, but, you know, regular books. I used to be an avid reader, and thinking about it a lot and kind of looking at my hangups with reading right now, I went through a period a few years ago over the course of probably a couple of years where I had a lot of things going on health-wise that were causing me problems. I had some major back problems. So I had constant severe pain.
Yeah.
And then I also had other stuff going on at that time that I didn't realize, things with, food allergies and other problems. And so there was a lot going on and I really couldn't focus. And so I went through a long time of trying to read, but just having this complete inability to focus. And that is something that can be like really painful and scary. And it's like, you don't know why you can't control your own mind. And I've realized now that it has conditioned me to be somewhat afraid of reading. Like I have had a really hard time reading because of just all that time and kind of how it's conditioned me to feel. So I'm wanting to break that. Like I know to break that, I just got to get pounding through some books and, you know, not worry about any of the details. I mean, when I read before, there was a year that I read over 70 novels and I wasn't concerned with much of anything. You know, I mean, I would absorb what I would absorb and I wouldn't what I wouldn't and, you know, so on. There are plenty of books that I just pushed through that I didn't exactly enjoy. Because it's like, you know, once you hit a certain point, you don't just abandon it, you get through it. So, I mean, there's no reason why I can't do that now. Yeah, I still have the thing like tonight, the kind of tired I am tonight would make it real, real hard to focus. And like, that's part of the reason why I still kind of get stressed out and have a problem with reading. I went to the library the other day with my wife when, my son was in school and she's picking out some books and I was looking around and wasn't really sure what I wanted to read. And I mean, I have a book here that I've been working on, but it's a really big book. So it's kind of been taking a while and, I wanted something a little bit more approachable. And so I'm just walking up and down the aisles and I come across Kurt Vonnegut. And I've read a lot of Kurt Vonnegut, in my day. I I'm sure I've read at least double digit number of his books. So like, well, you know, maybe I should try jumping back into something. So I looked and I picked out four Kurt Vonnegut books: Galapagos, Breakfast of Champions, Cat's Cradle, and Slaughterhouse-Five. Cat's Cradle is the first Kurt Vonnegut book that I ever read. When I was just starting to date my wife, one day we went to the library and she grabbed it and told me to get it and read it. So I did. And that was a book that, I mean, that's all it took. And I loved Kurt Vonnegut and just got in deeper and deeper. I believe that's also the only Kurt Vonnegut book I've ever read twice. But so I grabbed those four books. I checked them out and I started with Galapagos. I was reading a little bit at the library and, I'm not super far into it yet, like probably around 50 pages into it. And I think it's around a 300-ish page book. But you know, Kurt Vonnegut is a real good choice to kind of get in there and kind of shake off the dust and, get going with reading again. Cause his writing style, you know, his books aren't overly long. The way he uses words, yeah, you know, there's some authors like, there's this one book that we tried to read years ago. And we got it, and the author was so overly descriptive, but like in a really pretentious way. Like this book, he was writing about somebody who was supposedly broke, but how ridiculously descriptive he is about all these foods that no broke person could spend their money on. You know, he's going on and on about all these details of, you know, this BS with food that it was completely unrealistic. And
it sounds like a book by a writer that I love, but he did this. His name is Jim Harrison, and he would talk about these poor people, and then he'd go really deep into the food, and like they're not going to have that pretentious kind of outlook on the food. So it was kind of a distraction. Yeah,
yeah. This book, like I barely dipped my toes into it because my wife pushed through 50 pages and she gave up on it. So. You know, once she told me that, I didn't give it very much rope, but she's also a natural speed reader, so 50 pages is much less of an investment for her. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, some authors do that where they just, like, they get so wordy and do so little with it, you know?
Yeah.
Kurt Vonnegut uses very little words and accomplishes so much with it. So, I mean, he's a great, you know, author to get back into, and I have a great affinity for Kurt Vonnegut. I've read a lot of his books. I've probably read just about all of his novels. There's probably a couple I haven't read. Some of the earlier ones would be my guess. I've read probably a little less of his short stories because those, I think, get a little repetitive when you're reading. Because he's, like, you wouldn't call him a sci-fi writer, but he definitely has some very strong sci-fi elements in all of his writing.
Oh, he definitely does.
Yeah. He's probably the closest thing to somebody that you would just call a sci-fi writer without actually being, you know, in the sci-fi section of the bookstore. But yeah, I mean, the book Galapagos is great. Like the narrator of the book, you don't really know who it is. He uses a lot of unconventional things to play with you throughout the book. Throughout like any of his books, but, like in this one right off the bat, he's listing a few characters that are going to be, you know, kind of bigger characters in the book, and he puts an asterisk by two of them. And a little bit later, he explains that they're going to die really soon. And then he tells you this other character is going to die soon too, but it's going to take a little bit longer for them to die. And then the narrator tells you that they are already dead. And also, by the way, this is looking back. I forget the time frame, but it's looking back an immense amount of time to 1983 when people had big brains that made them do stupid things. But there's just so many things about Kurt Vonnegut's books. One thing that has always stuck in my mind, one of his books of, I think it was a book of short stories or essays, and he draws an illustration of an asshole. And it's basically just an asterisk, you know, it's just, that's all it is. Yeah. But that's his illustration of an asshole. And like that cracks me up. Like it's such a simple little silly thing, but I can never look at the Walmart logo without thinking that just the Walmart logo is just a big asshole up on the side of their building.
And I never will either from now on.
Yeah.
That you brought that up.
And there's just a lot of things about Kurt Vonnegut that I love. So I'm reading Galapagos right now, but I checked out those four books. I got to get going with them if I'm going to read them all before returning them. But like, so two things. Like, one, I hope this kind of breaks me out of my funk with reading, where I have these kind of negative, you know, subconscious feelings that make it hard for me to really get into reading books. But I also, like, I haven't reread many books in my life. Like, I'm typically, I read it once, and then there's not really a reason to read it again. There's, you know, I've read Cat's Cradle twice. I've read 100 Years of Solitude three times. There's very, even books that I really love. Like, I really love some William Faulkner books. Like, for a while, The Sound and the Fury was my favorite book. I only read it once. Still haven't read that one a second time. So I, you know, I'm also kind of looking forward to exploring more the experience of reading a book a second time. And there's a lot of great books. You know, it's like now I'm kind of at this point where it's been so long since I've read a lot of these books that I've loved that it's a lot more reasonable to read them again, you know? So that might be a good way for me to do two things. Like, one is kind of break back into a good old habit, and also to try something different, which is, you know, reading something that I've read before and doing that more on a regular basis, focusing more on rediscovering or re-enjoying something that I've enjoyed rather than, you know, always investing in something that's new.
Yeah. Vonnegut is one of those writers that I discovered on my own, just because I'd always heard about him. And, you know, the first book I read, of course, was Slaughterhouse-Five. And it's one of those books, it just, like, very economical in words. There's some weird stuff going on, and but it stuck with me. And I've not read near as much of Vonnegut as you have, but he is, his use, his mixture, his ability to mix humor with melancholy, I guess, is really, really, that's just kind of his trait, I guess. And another thing, you said Cat's Cradle. That's one of the books I hadn't read. You recommended it to me a while back, and I read it. And just, I have it here in front of me. It's 127 chapters in 287 pages. So, for just getting back into reading something, he, like, chapter 75 is a page and a half.
Yeah, it, you know, it's not, actually, like, it's really great for that because it breaks it up, but it gives you that sense of success. When I was reading years ago, when I was getting really heavily into reading, the year that I read 70 books, leading up into that, the Brothers Karamazov by Dostoevsky, I had a friend who really loved that book. And it's huge. It's a huge book. I mean, it's an old Russian book. Of course, it's huge. You know, 1,000-plus pages, something to that effect. And, you know, I got it, and I started reading it, and I read, and I read, and I read, and I read. And finally, somehow, I finished reading that book. And I enjoyed the book a lot, but, you know, being what it was, there were also a lot of periods that were very tough to get through. But reading that book made me realize that I could read anything. I mean, if I get through that book, I could read any book. Like, nothing was undoable. You know, and then after that point, I read books that certainly challenged that thought a little bit, like Ulysses. But, you know, you need those wins to see that you could be successful. Just like in anything you do. Like, we've been making this podcast for a while. We needed to have some success. And not success in, like, numbers or listeners or whatever, but success in getting it done, getting it accomplished. And once we got that success for a while, it got a lot easier because we became pretty confident that we could do the things that we needed to do to do this, you know, that we could get together periodically. And we tried different ways. We found what worked out better. So having those elements of success is important whenever you're kind of embarking on something new or revisiting something that's difficult again. Being able to read this book and, like, you go a few pages and you finished a chapter, it's a little win. It's a very small win, but it's a win. And it really does kind of help with the mentality and, like, you know, me realizing that I could do this, that I can focus on reading it. Honestly, another thing was when I was at my worst with, you know, being able to focus and connect with things, I was trying to read Mind Management. And I got into the second trade, and that's as far as I could get. And I just, like, it was so frustrating, and I couldn't do it. Like, I couldn't keep focused. It was so awful. And so, like, Mind Management was something that was, like, a little bit intimidating to me. It was a little bit scary because it brought back these awful, awful feelings of not having control over my own mind. And I bought all the hardcovers at some point after that and started kind of working on that. And I read through some and then kind of stalled up again. And then that was when I decided to start switching digital. So I sold all the hardcovers to a friend for what I was able to pick up all the digital copies for on a sale. So it was a great deal for my friend. It allowed me to get it all digitally without spending more money out of pocket. And once I had it that way, I was able to just fly through it because I didn't have the other obstacles of, you know, wanting to protect this physical book that I couldn't easily carry around with me because, you know, its size you know, wanting to keep it from getting damaged. So once it was digital, I was able to just fly through it because I just, like, one of the biggest things was I just kept moving. Just keep pushing on. And, you know, my brain is not what it was at that point before. So I was able to get through it. So I think Kurt Vonnegut's going to help me do that with other books. Cause, you know, I mean, comics are easy to read, but I also sometimes, you know, reading too many comics feels like, I don't know, eating too many grapes. You know, grapes are fruit. They're good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're easy to eat. They're little, you know, you pop one in your mouth, you chew it up, you're done. Like nothing too big of a challenge. You're not dealing with a peel or a rind or cutting stuff up or anything. But you know, eventually you're just like, I just ate too many damn grapes.
It's all about balance, finding a balance between different things that you love. You know, yeah, you gorge yourself on TV and nothing but TV, but there's, for me, I could not just watch nothing but TV. The things that I love are vast, mm-hmm. you know, between comics and books and movies and music. You got to have find that balance. And a couple of things come to mind. One, you're dealing with having the trouble with getting into a book. Larry McMurtry, I read a lot of him years ago, and he had a major health crisis. I don't know if it's a stroke or a heart attack, something like that. And he could neither read or write, I think. And it was one of those things. He had a friend and he gradually kind of worked his way through it. To where he started producing again, maybe not on the scale that he had before, but he, you know, it's that persistence to just try like little things. He started out with little things, with having some help, and then he started doing things on his own, like doing essays for a couple of journals and this and that. And he's worked his way back to where he, you know, he won an Academy Award for adapting a short story into a movie that Brokeback Mountain and stuff. So he stuck with it. Number two that comes to mind is you brought up Ulysses. One year, for some reason, I tortured myself. I read Moby Dick, Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, which is a massive doorstopper book, and Ulysses. Almost all in a row. To the point that I broke myself of liking really, really big books. I've accomplished the fact that I can read a big book. Now I just kind of want to find smaller things to read. And, but Vonnegut is kind of perfect, like you said, for what you're talking about because, yeah, he has an economy of words, but the fact that he doesn't have a lot of words and it's not, over descriptive or anything like that doesn't mean that it doesn't have depth in what he says and his point of view on the world. I mean, So It Goes always pops to mind when I'm going through a day from Slaughterhouse Five. It's like, if I don't have a tattoo, but if I got a tattoo, it might be that. So It Goes.
Yeah. One of my favorite lines too is, Sage Francis did a song called Vonnegut Busy. And he has the line to start the song off. Of all the words of mice and men, the saddest are what might have been. I always thought that was a really great line. But my favorite thing that Vonnegut said, and I forget, you know, exactly what the source was, whether it was a book or an interview or what exactly. But he was talking about society, and he said that the downfall of society, like the thing, you know, what's degrading society is the erosion of the family unit. You know, it used to be that people out of necessity stayed closer to their families more often than not. You know, you grow up around your aunts and uncles and grandmas and grandpas and et cetera, et cetera. So you always had, you always had people to hold you accountable. You know, you owed it to your family. You knew that you had family that was going to be there that, you know, if you were doing wrong, you know, they were going to call you on it. And, you know, nowadays, I mean, he said this years ago because, I mean, he's been dead for some time now. And this was closer to the end of his life that I remember reading this. And, you know, he made that statement and, like, even then it was true, but it's more and more like that. Like, you know, people aren't staying by their family. And even if they do, like, there's no kind of accountability anymore like there used to be, you know, just across the board. Yeah. You know, you see... I mean, everybody is their own person too. So there's always the element of just who you are as a person, but you know, the environment that you're in has a big effect on that too. And if you have a sense of accountability to the people around you, you're going to be more likely to make better choices, to push yourself in the right direction. And like that's between that and social media, like those are the two things that are just ruining the world is, you know, not enough people have a grandma there to whip their ass when they're out of line. With social media, people feel way too free to go and be assholes to people they don't even know.
I think there is a lack of connection that he really did hit on there. And you hit on the Facebook world, the social media world, where it really is changing the way we interact with everybody. So that really... That's a good point you just brought up. It really hit me there thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's part of the reason that Kurt Vonnegut always, you know, struck close to home for me. Like, I like his writing, but like his philosophy also speaks a lot to me. He shares the same birthday as my mom, November 11th. Hello. And my other favorite writer at that time, somebody who was really into for a time, Hunter S. Thompson, shares my birthday. So I thought it was kind of interesting that basically my two favorite writers shared birthdays with my family, you know, myself and my mom.
It's weird you bring him up because I think I read Vonnegut and Thompson for the first time in the same time period. And they're both an experience.
Yeah, they really are. You know, very different viewpoints on the world to, you know, compared to what you're used to. And you know, Hunter Thompson, of course, is pretty out there. And you know, I think in both cases they see the negativity in the world, but they also see like the reality, and they also see the you know the positivity that is there to be got.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much sums it up right there. Yeah. What score, Paul?
It's still 1-1. It's bottom of the ninth. One out. 3-2. Runner on first.
Oh, man. Oh,
and he just got caught trying to steal second. He's in a pickle right now. That's a bad time to get caught.
Who's at bat? I mean, who's...
It's Yasmani Grandal's at bat. So now, instead of being one out with runner on first, it's two outs. It's 3-2 to Yasmani Grandal, who has been awful this postseason. So it looks like we're probably going to extra innings unless he pulls off a miracle here. Terrible time to get caught leading off too far.
I don't have anything else, man. Do you have anything else you want to bring up?
Nah, you know, I think we can call it a night. I think we've talked plenty.
I do want to say that I do appreciate the guys that have been jumping in to fill in.
Well, technically, you've only had one fill-in. Like, everything else has just been off-week bonus content.
Well, it's ball, yeah. I mean, you had JK, you've had Rafer, Dennis has jumped on, Mr. Krieger. I got his name right. Not Krieger, it's Krieger.
That's what he says. I'm pretty sure he's wrong, though.
He might be. He probably just does it to mess with people. I mean, you know, Alex and Joey and, whatever you want to call it. It's just nice that you figured out a way to keep it going, with your time. And I appreciate all of them for joining in. Because you know what? I'd much rather listen to you talk to them. I love talking to you, but it's nice to hear you talk to other people too. So I get the best of both worlds. Every other week, I get to have a chat with you. And then next week, I get to hear you talk to somebody else interesting. And it's, you know, a lot of interesting perspectives. And I always enjoy hearing what they got to say. And so when's the next time you're going to get to talk about the X-Men movies, you know?
I got to find time to watch those damn things.
I try to get my wife. That's one thing. My wife, she doesn't care about comic books either, but she does love the X-Men movies. So that's one of those things. I almost got her to start watching them last week, but we got tied up to some other stuff. So that is one thing that I have. After listening to you and Alex talk about them, we're going to hopefully start next week or two going through those. So when y'all talk about them, I'll have it fresher in my head. So let's wrap this up.
All right. Well, you could find us on Twitter at OccasionallySTW. I'm on Twitter at Who's Paul. You are on Twitter at MD Sparkman. You can find this podcast and many other great podcasts at NerdyLegion.com. And that's pretty much it.
Go
Dodgers. If you're rooting against the Dodgers, then, you know, just go to hell. But
go to hell and don't ever listen to this show again.
I live in New England. Like, I live surrounded by Red Sox fans. And I got to say, going into this World Series, the Red Sox have been killer this year. So it's not like the expectations were to win this thing. But you still, you know, root for your team to win it. So you don't just go on like, oh, yeah, we're going to lose at some point. Let's get to it. But the Red Sox have just been killer this year. So losing the first two games was definitely frustrating, but also not unexpected. So this game now, we're bottom of the ninth, two outs, a runner on first again because the batter, Grandal, got walked. Now what's going to happen? Craziness.
What's going to happen? People listen to this on Tuesday are going to know what happened. That's the frustrating thing for people. They're listening to us talk about this. But you know what? Right now, we don't know.
Yep, you're just listening to my angst.
They really need to win this one, though, don't they?
Well, yeah, I mean, if they lose this, they're down 3-0, which the only time a team's come back from that in baseball was the Red Sox against the Yankees in the ALCS in 2004, if I have the year correct. And that was they went on to win the World Series. I believe they even swept the World Series, and that was their first World Series championship in like 80 plus years. Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, was the player in game four against the Yankees, down 3-0. He stole second base at a key moment and ended up being the tying run that kept them in the game that allowed them to go on to win the series. So Dave Roberts, the Dodgers manager, essentially was the first step in them overcoming the biggest deficit to ever be overcome in baseball to go on to win their first World Series. So really, these bastards owe it to him to let him win a World Series with the Dodgers now. I mean,
they really do.
Pretty rude of them right now.
Let's kind of put our thoughts out into the universe to share it to them that they just need to choke for his, in a matter of thanks to him. Yeah.
I just want Taylor to get a double right now and finish this sucker. Anyways, let's hang this up. People don't need to listen to me do this.
Screw a double, home run.
Either way, a double would win the game also because there's a runner on first.
All right, man. Good luck to the Dodgers. Hopefully by the time people listen to this, they will have won.
So it goes.
Goes up. Must come down, but not me, clown. I cut him, crack a speaker when I'm pumping. So jump in and watch your ears start humming through the block. And don't forget to boom shock, shock a lot. Well, damn, do it all. Can I rock? I hear it.